Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of Review Time's Theme Park Cast, a weekly show where we discuss all the ins and outs of attractions and parks from around the world. My name is Luke and I will be your host today as we finish exploring Australia's own Warner Brothers Movie World, as well as its history from opening day till today. But please welcome to the red carpet my co-host, the man who thinks it truly isn't a Warner Brothers theme park unless they install an incredible Burt Wonderstone land. It's my Review Time co-host, Dominic Lacey.
Is it bad that I have no idea what Burt Wonderstone actually is?
I think that might be a good thing because I was trying to think of a bad Warner Brothers film to bring up at this point here, and that's what stuck to my mind. It's this film where Steve Carell and Steve Buscemi play like
Steve
a duo
Buscemi.
Of magicians.
Isn't it, yeah. Steve Buscemi?
Steve Buscemi is a funnier Buscemi way to say it.
Buscemi sounds like, you know, when you go to a Greek restaurant, it's like, hey, can I get the mez platter? Can I have
with
some
side of Buscemi, of course, sir.
The side of Buscemi.
That was possibly the worst Greek accent of all time.
He's from New York. He's like, hey, welcome to my Greek restaurant.
Come on in. But the thing would be, the irony would be, if a land was opened based on that terrible magician film, it wouldn't be the worst Warner Brothers film to at one point have had a themed land in this park.
What?
Because in 1998, they opened up the Wild Wild West Falls ride, which is like a really well-themed log flume, based off the terrible Will Smith Wild Wild West film, which the only thing I remember is there was a big spider, a steampunk spider. That's all I remember.
It was like cowboys, so it was set back in the cowboy time, so it was like deserts and cows and boys, but then it was just steampunk.
All those cowboy things.
So it was just like steam desert and steam cows and steam boys and Will Smith.
And the song, of course, in the Wild Wild West.
And it's time
in the Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West. Which plays in the park every now and then.
Yeah, and that name for the attraction only lasted for a few years anyway, because some people say it was a licensing dispute, but I just think they were smart enough to go, this is a terrible film. Why would we have a ride themed about it when it works just as well as a generic themed ride? This movie got a 15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh,
do you really
no.
want your theme park ride themed? I would love to know, what do you think is the worst movie ratings-wise that has a good theme park attraction?
Oh. That'd be a good episode where you go through like IPs of, you know, ridiculously hated bits of media and then sort of see if they've got correlations in theme parks, like some sort of integration that some executive somewhere has gone, we need this. Though the thing for me is that I can't imagine that Warner Brothers were like, hey, we have to put this in at Movie World on the Gold Coast. I'm sure that Movie World would have gone to them and been like, hey, yeah, do you have any
Western movies coming up?
Yeah, something that's, you know, Western or would relate to a log flume. And they're like, oh, we've got this one with Will Smith. And they would be like, Will Smith? Sign me up.
Will Smith, he's not
obscure anymore.
19, that's, you know, he's obviously coming off from Fresh Prince, but that's, you know, just a few years after Men in Black as well. Like, he was a big name even back then. So for him to, you know, the one movie that I can maybe think of, but I don't know if it would be as badly reviewed as Wild Wild West, would be the worst movie to best attraction is probably Waterworld Stunt Show.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
At Universal Studios. The fact that that movie came out, you know, almost 30 years ago at this point, but the attraction was built for Universal Beijing opening later this year shows how good that, like, probably more people have seen the show now than have seen the movie it's based on.
I feel like it's because the premise is just so perfectly simple, where it's like the world is engulfed in water.
Yeah.
Now they found land. Even though they're fighting over this bit of dirt, that doesn't change whether it is.
it doesn't always happen, but I think a bad movie could easily be turned into a good experience, just like happened with Waterworld, because it isn't hard to find 4 to 5 minutes of good material in a film, which is usually all that a theme park ride is. Of course, then you look at something like Fast and Furious Supercharged and you realize there isn't even 4 to 5 good minutes in that entire series because the ride is trash.
Oh, you're saying something very controversial there. I know a lot of people who do very much like Fast and Furious. So
I'd like to meet them.
Rest in peace.
Is their name Mr. Universal Studios, Mr. NBC, Mr. Comcast, just all the executives. I think they're the only ones who enjoy that.
I have something to tell you, Luke.
Oh, no.
I'm the world's biggest Universal Studios production of Fast and Furious. The world's biggest fan.
World's biggest production of Universal Fast and Furious live in the flesh? What are you doing here?
No, I said it wrong. Oh, this
I
is
get
so...
what you were going for.
Hey, look. Oh, we're talking about Movie World.
All right. Which, good point to start, because Wild West Falls was one of the first big additions to the park, arguably the one that came before it and kind of set the path that this park would go down is, of course, the Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon, inverted Vekoma, suspended looping coaster, really intense, originally themed to Lethal Weapon, becomes later on themed to Arkham Asylum, a ride actually based on a video game.
Oh, but that's way down the line. We can talk about that later.
And who knows? Because that ride hasn't been open since 2019, but apparently it's not closed.
Well, so we're starting way back in sort of 1991. So in the last episode, if you're just sort of tuning in now,
about up to 95 in the last episode.
Yeah, so we're now sort of covering the early attractions. Sorry, you're right. We haven't gone all the way back to 1991. If you go back to that episode, then you can get filled into where we are. I don't know the exact date, but I know that we don't have those notes anymore. So the time's a little bit wonky at this point. But the definite...
It opens up on Boxing Day, so 26th of December, 1995, Arkham Asylum. So it's a very big Australian thing is to open major attractions just after Christmas, because it leads into what is arguably probably the busiest season for Australian theme parks, which is the school holidays, the Christmas school holidays, which is around 6 weeks from Christmas week to the end of January sort of thing. And this is the first big thing. So we're at the stage now, though, where they're just adding new attractions and not removing anything.
Well, this was
what do you think of Lethal Weapon?
This was the park's first roller coaster, so this was definitely a huge change for Movie World. This is where it went from just being sort of about the shows and the movie magic and sort of having just a few rides. Like, at that point, I think we just had things like Gremlins and that. There were simulators.
Kind of still more about the movie-making experience anyway.
Yeah, it was definitely like the park from the ground up was designed to be like you are in this sort of functioning movie studio. You're going backstage, you're seeing all of these sort of effects and that being done.
And they make the movies, stuff like this.
Yeah, and then Lethal Weapon sort of came in and was the first ride to just be essentially just a ride. Like, the queue and all of that was themed, but the attraction itself had no theming. It was just a roller coaster. And I think that sort of set the path for the next couple of years, especially sort of leading in to what we now know as Movie World. Mm. It set the precedent. There was, and I would say that there's probably a timeline out there in the universe somewhere where Movie World didn't get this attraction and went down a completely different path.
Yeah.
This really set the
tone they would go down. And this, at the time, in the 90s, like, we look back now and we go, oh, no, a Vekoma suspended looping coaster. My neck, my back is very sore. But at the time, this would have been a world-class attraction.
Oh, yeah. It's like, so, you know, arrow coasters back in the day. It was like, oh, baby, gonna ride an arrow. But it's almost that comparison thing. It's like, you know, you can go back and play a game that you absolutely love. And for the time, that game could be, you know, the standard of entertainment in that industry.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, once you sort of get used to modern techniques and all of that, it's hard to go back. Yeah. It's like, it's almost like old musicals where it's just about the music. You know, Phantom of the Opera has nowhere near as much emotion and, I guess, cinematic prowess as modern musicals, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a different way of storytelling. And that's the same in the way that theme parks have gone. Kind of parks, I feel this is the 90s is kind of when a lot of parks decided, do they go more down the thrills route or do they go more down the storytelling route? Mm. And Movie World along the way has still kind of tiptoed on both sides of the line with a lot of their experiences, which we're going to get to. But this was, as you're saying, the first one where they're like, okay, thrill rides, big thrill ride, world-class thrill ride, first of its kind. I believe most Vekoma suspended looping coasters have a very similar layout. I think this was the first of its kind to have a new, like, ending half or something like that. There's something about this that was unique for the time, which anytime we get something unique in Australia is always a good thing.
So this was a first of its kind to feature a 765-meter layout with a helix. So I believe that
is when your legs felt like they were about to get chopped off.
Yeah.
Once it became Arkham Asylum and they changed the trains.
For those that don't know, a helix is basically, it's kind of like a corkscrew. But
think of what a helix, the helix shape, and the roller coaster goes around that. It's like a way of doing a circle, essentially. But usually you'll go up or down a couple of times.
It's like a horizontal corkscrew, but you don't go upside down. Yeah. It's just sort of like you go around in a circle. It's like you're going down
a
toilet.
You get a lot of laterals. It essentially sucks you to the side.
Yeah, you're being sucked down a big toilet. You're like spinning around, going down, then you eventually get flung out. They're fun.
And then, so next up, so that's in 95. The next big thing comes in 1997. Usually we wouldn't talk about this sort of thing, but this is actually a pretty big thing. In 1997, once again in December, Marvin the Martian in 3D opens, which is just a 3D film, but this is the world's first animated 3D film. So nowadays we think a lot, you know, most theme parks have, you know, Shrek 3D or Kung Fu Panda in 3D. All of those can be stemmed back to this, because this is the world's first animated 3D film, which is crazy.
It's kind of incredible that that's at Movie World, this almost obscure theme park on the Gold Coast. Like, at this point, it hadn't even gotten the prestige that, you know, parks such as Wonderland and all of that had in Australia. Even Luna Park, probably, I would say, at this point, had more prestige than Movie World. Though, at this point, I think Luna Park's closed. For, like, the third time.
Which, the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, 96, I think it closed again.
04 it opens or something?
Yeah.
For the current season, and so, once again, another thing, this goes into the Roxy Theatre. It actually survives for, I think, around 7 years, which is a fairly long amount of time for just a 3D film. I think nowadays, in the last kind of amount of times we've been in the last 2 years, I think I've seen 3 or 4 different films in that space.
Hmm.
So for something to survive for 7 years is pretty big. And then to round out the decade, they bring in the Wild West Falls Adventure Ride.
It's time for the Wild Wild West.
So this Flume ride, at the time, was the largest ever ride investment in Australia, featuring an artificial mountain around 400 meters or 1,300 feet wide and 105 feet or 32 meters tall.
Which still looks originally going to be very impressive to this day. Yeah, it's probably one of the best themed things in all of Australia.
I would still say to this day, Wild West Falls Adventure Ride is Australia's best themed ride.
Yeah. I agree.
Even though, in recent years, I think they got a big deal on fake TNT because it's everywhere in the ride for some reason. It's like they were buying them on Wish.com and accidentally added an extra zero, so bought 1,000 sticks instead of 100, and had to figure out how to use them, so they didn't have to explain to the boss why they spent 10 times as much as they should have.
Hey, look, boss, my original intention all this time, I know we're just going to have one scene with TNT, but if you give me a couple of those little sticky pads that you put on the wall in rental properties because you can't hammer anything into the wall, look, I'll go around, I'll just put those sticky command strip pads on everything, and you got a whole new attraction. And that's basically what it was labeled as in recent years when it reopened. But that was they added all of those new effects and the TNT refurbishment, which we'll call it. They did that only in the last decade. So this is, at this point in the late 90s, it's still Wild West Falls. And they actually mention in reports for that year, like, and I just want to point out as well, they have consistently opened up a new sort of world-class experience every year on Boxing Day.
Every couple of years at this point, yeah.
Like, that's kind of incredible. It goes, it's 1995 for Lethal Weapon. Yep. And then 1997 for Marvin the Martian, which doesn't seem like a huge deal, but considering it was world first, we'll make a huge deal about it. And then in 1998, they bring out Wild West Falls. So for a small Australian park, that's really impressive. But they actually attributed this attraction to giving a massive spike in attendance. Like Wild Wild West was a crowd pleaser, even though I don't think that was directly tied to the film. I think that was just that it was a good ride.
Which the ride stands on its own without the film, let's be honest. It's got some really great elements. You go up into the mountain and it may look like, oh, this is just, you know, a generic flume ride. I'm going to go up into the mountain and come back down. But no, you go up into the mountain. It's got this really cool part where it looks like you're going to go forwards and you go down a dry backwards drop, like over a kind of airtime hill almost, and splash down. Then you've got like 4 minutes you just float through. You've got this cool little town you float through. You know, it's got this nice amount of building towards that finale drop because you know it's coming. You've seen it out the front, but it builds the tension really well to get to it.
Yeah.
And then it drops you at the top. It's got this turntable too. So it's really hard to tell how high up you are because there's a turntable and some doors. And until that turntable spins you around and those doors fling open, you don't realize you're almost 40 meters up.
Mm. Oh, it's...
But,
I massively like this attraction. Massively like. I could have probably used a better word than massively like, but
we'll
go with that. I really like this attraction, mainly because it's one of the few attractions in Australia that is longer than like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and I just love...
You can just sit and relax for a while. And it's a people eater. It pumps through riders compared to a lot of rides in Australia, even though it's only like 1,500 people an hour, which is nothing compared to some of the Disney people eaters. But for Australia, that's a whopping big amount of people.
Oh, 100%. And this attraction, one of the things that really bothers me about sort of modern theme park sensibilities is that they're like, no, you have to have intense thrill rides that are just constantly like, bam, 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 doing new things and making you feel new emotions and thrills.
Mm.
And then, but this possibly still has to be one of my favorite attractions at Movie World.
Yeah, it's still a great ride.
It's just like, you wait in line for maybe 10 to 30 minutes, and then you get to relax for a little bit. There's a little bit of relaxing on this. It's like, it's not hugely thrill. It's got a nice thrill at the end, but it's not like massively overwhelming thrills. It's like Splash Mountain, I guess.
Kind of that drop as well. The backwards drop. It's quite a nice little fun element you don't see a lot on flume rides at all. So to have it is really cool, and it comes at a point where you're not expecting it. I remember riding this with my mum at one point. I don't know how we managed to convince her to go on, but I remember at the backwards part she wanted to kill me. She was like, "How'd you get me on?" She did the same on Space Mountain. So I think this says more about my mum and her sensibility to rides than it says about me. But
my
anyway.
My dad did the same thing to me on Space Mountain. I'm like, come on, Space Mountain. It's a good roller coaster. He's like, okay, it doesn't go upside down. I'm like, no, it's not that intense. And he goes on it and he just had like this face. He was grinning sort of ear to ear, but his eyes were like screaming, I want to kill you.
Yeah.
And it was like grabbing me and being like,
face for the photo, but as soon as we get off.
He had a really good time, but I could tell at the same time, he was like, this is great. I only want to do this once.
I never need to do this again for the rest of my life.
I wonder what that is. It's like, yeah, I know a lot of my parents, they're not into rides. And would you say your parents are the same? Why are we so like, yes, rides? Whereas,
yeah, I don't know. I think to me, even my parents aren't super into theme parks at all.
Yeah,
but I can attribute my theme park passion to my grandmother who took me to Disneyland for the first time. And then from there, it got to a stage where she took me when I was 8 and then again when I was 16. And then it kind of became me. Like, I would save up my money. I would, you know, go on trips to wherever they were.
You,
I think I've been, you know,
you are
a couple of times
making
to the Gold Coast.
Like, an executive for Disney just like moan hearing that. They're just like, oh, yes, she brought him and now he's going to bring his kids. And he's just like, oh.
Yeah, that's what we like to hear.
That's what
Get
we
him
want.
In early. But we are at the end of the 90s. This park has added pretty much every 2 years a major attraction, which is pretty dang good in all honesty. And they start up the new millennium with another brand new ride, the Roadrunner roller coaster, which is just a Vekoma Junior coaster. But I think this is probably one of the first roller coasters I ever went on as a kid.
Yeah, so we're now into the year 2000.
Yeah, so I would have been eight. I'm sure like I would have been on smaller. But this kind of, this is just a kid's ride, obviously.
Yeah.
But it would have been that perfect stepping stone from, you know, a wacky worm to an actual coaster.
I remember this. Like, I remember when I went to Movie World when I was very young. I think it would have been around this time, sort of.
Yeah.
It was only very shortly after it opened, because I remember we went to Disney World back in 1999, and then my family were like, oh, let's do a trip up to the Gold Coast. We'll go to Movie World. We'll sort of
That's a step down.
Well, that's why I remember that.
We know you love Disney World, so let's go to the Gold Coast.
Well, I remember my parents giving me this very specific criticism when I was going to the Gold Coast on our trip in 2015, or it was 2014 or 2015. Where we went up to the Gold Coast with all of our friends. Yep. And my parents sort of just made an offhand comment that was like, hey, look, if you've been to Disneyland and all of that, you may not really find the Gold Coast theme parks all that appealing. I'm like, why would my parents say that? That's very strange. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that they basically did that when they went to Disney World in 1999, which I would say around this sort of turning millennia is when Disney World was at its peak.
That's peak. Yeah, that's peak.
Yeah,
Disney, for sure.
That was, Animal Kingdom was brand spankers. Epcot had brand new entertainment and was still about the world. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, Magic Kingdom was fresh. Everything was just fresh. And then they went on this trip. And it's not to say that Movie World and all of that are bad.
No,
it's just that they're Australian local theme parks. They're basically the local park for Australia. They don't even
It'd
compare
to, like,
be the
same
as,
like, you know, if you, wherever you live in America or whatever country you live in, it'd be like, you know, going to your local Six Flags compared to going to Disney.
Mm.
Sure, you're still going to have a great time, and we always do, but it's not going to be the same. And if you go into it expecting, you know, that this isn't a world, you know, where you can surround yourself in theme parks for 2 weeks like you can in Orlando, you're still going to have a great time. There is still, to this day, whilst pretty much none of the rides we've talked about up to this stage except for Wild West Falls are still open, everything that is there is still a lot of fun.
The other thing to also point out is that Disney World cost my family almost like, from what I can remember talking to them, it was like 10 to 20 grand of Australian money during 1999. And going to the Gold Coast for a family is probably like 2 to 3, maybe 5 grand max. So, it's
you're
a lot
probably
cheaper.
Getting your whole trip for less than you're getting flights to Orlando. Let's be honest.
100%. But that's not to say that they're bad. I still have a lot of fun every time I go to the Gold Coast. And I think
the fact
it's just...
We have been there. We're from, if we were to drive, which we don't, it'd be, a 10-hour drive away. And we've been there, 4 times in the last 18 months?
Yeah. It's a good opportunity to catch up with friends.
Yeah. And at this stage, I'll take any theme park I can get.
Sydney, baby. Yeah,
even Luna Park Sydney's closed at the moment. What am I meant to do? Go to the Easter show. That's what I did.
Well, there was a comment on YouTube today where someone was like, oh, why would you go to the Easter show and ride rides? The rides are so expensive, like $15 per ride. It's not $15 per ride, only the top end rides are that, but it's around.
There's 3 rides that cost $15
per ride. On average, it's about $8.
Yeah.
But
for a thrill ride, and maybe 6 or 7 for, a flat ride, a more family-friendly type of ride.
For a lot of people in Sydney, you've got to keep in mind that Sydney is Australia's most populated city. We have 5 million people, and the only theme park that we had was Luna Park Sydney, which is currently closed. So our local theme park...
I think it reopens in like 2 months.
Mm.
But there is no theme park at the moment. There hasn't been for the last 4 months. And even when there is... There's still more rides at the Royal Easter Show than what there is at Luna Park Sydney.
Yeah. And our local theme park...
It's going to cost you a lot more money to get on, but there is still a lot more rides.
Oh, yeah. So it's a 10-hour drive if we want to go and have a proper theme park fix. Like, you've got action parks, or what I consider to be action parks, like your Jamboroos and all of that, where it's, those are fine, but they're not a theme park. They're just sort of like...
Yeah.
I don't know how you describe them, but it's where it's like a little bit of
they're
mixture
fun.
Of
they're
rides.
They're a fun day out, but they don't really quite hit that same, scratch that same itch of an actual theme park.
Yeah, you're about to say itch their own scratch.
It still works, right?
They don't itch their own scratch.
Moving on. So we're in the 2000s now. In 2001, we actually see the first closure of any of the attractions. And one of them, interestingly,
the angel
is what I would argue probably one of the biggest rides in the park, the Gremlins ride, which I have vivid memories of, but it only lasted for 10 years.
Yeah. Though I'm reading here.
Yeah.
In reading this timeline, it's you are right. I remember this being around for much longer, but it did close.
So do
I was about to doubt that. I'm like, oh, that doesn't seem right. And then I just realized Scooby-Doo opened in 2002.
Yeah, which I must have gone as a child more times than I remember, because I definitely remember riding this over a number of trips. So I must have gone, more than twice or more than once in the 9 years between when I was born and when this ride closed.
I can give you an exact date as to when I went. I could, but I can't at the moment. Just purely based on... Look, my dad works for Nintendo, but I can't prove that.
He's going to go through the check-in register. He's going to go through every guest that scanned their tickets every single day of every single year, and I'll come back and tell you the exact day I was there.
No, but the reason I can tell you is because I have park maps from when I went, which also had an entertainment schedule, but they're in a box. I can see the box. It's... packed away in my cupboard.
Oh, that could be a future episode of the show. It's going through the box. The same sort of thing, like bags that have park maps from, Disneyland in 2000, 2008, 2000, like every year that I go, and then I put them in the same kind of box. One of my other, I didn't even go to this at the time, but I have a magazine, kind of a souvenir book. In my big bookshelf of Disney books from the 25th anniversary of Disney World. And on the front cover, baby, it's the cake castle. There it is, front and center. Mwah! But I used to love, reading through that. And because it still had so many of the classic Epcot rides, like Horizons and stuff like that. And I was so excited to go to this park. And by the time I got there, that park didn't exist anymore. But I'd always read that as a kid.
Do you remember there was, like, I feel like we're the same person when I say this. And I know I sounded like I was just...
A lot of people think our voices sound the same. What was the episode where they're like, wait, there's two people who run this channel?
Oh, we did. Like, yeah, we did an episode on Review Time.
2 years into it or something.
Which was us both sort of doing things. We'll like sitting next to each other or something. And we're like, thank you. And then people are like, wait, there's two of you? Which is why we now at the start of the video, even though I haven't done this recently, we usually have like our little icon of ourselves to show us, which it's wrong now because it's me bald with a beard and I am currently just a fuzzy thumb of a man. I'm growing out my hair.
And his beard are racing each other to see who can grow to an acceptable length quicker.
I'm like if you got a brush and just went around my head with a black colored brush. That's my head at the moment because I'm just like the same length of hair all around. Even I've got like a mad monobrow thing going as well. Like I'm just gone wild, feral man after I was recently in a production where I had to like shave my head and shave my beard and all of that. And now I'm just like rebelling against myself.
What are they going to do? Kick me out of the show. It's done.
But it would be a good episode, like a live stream. Would be cool where we grab sort
going
of like
through the boxes and bags
and try to do stuff where
I
it's
do
like
love
ooh.
Going through old maps and being like, even though a lot of time it makes me sad,
yeah,
like it makes me like, oh damn, I miss this, oh damn, I miss this, but then it is a lot of oh, it got replaced by this. If the replacement is better, I'm always happy. If it's not, makes me sad.
Wait a second. I didn't even finish what I was saying before. So what I was saying is I feel like we're the same person in the sense that when we would have gone back to our hotels, if it was around Disneyland or anywhere where there was a theme park, like, do you remember going to hotels and they would have like the pamphlets and it would be like, these are the,
many.
Yeah, the local
even
the theme
ones
parks.
You weren't going to, you'd be like, ooh.
Ooh, Knott's Berry Farm or Six Flags. I remember we were going on a trip, which was specifically just to Disneyland, and at our hotel, it just had like all of the different little promotional pamphlets, and I was just like grabbing all of the theme park ones I could, and they're up in the box. We'll have to go through the box.
Future episode coming up, the box. It's just gonna be called
the box.
The other ride that closed is the Gravity Homestead, the Young Einstein or whatever it was film, the sideways house, which is nowhere near as big of a loss as the Gremlins ride.
No.
Obviously. But don't worry, Dom, because they added a brand new ride to make up for closing two. A Splash Zone themed to Looney Tunes.
In the Looney Tunes village. Yeah, that doesn't really
make
up for it.
Which I think is still there. It's kind of the one that's got the, like, water tower. You know that one? Over by driving school.
Oh, yeah, it is still there. However, they do make up for it later on.
Yeah.
Because during 2001, they closed two attractions, but then on Boxing Day, because they just love opening things on Boxing Day,
apparently.
Everything, like almost everything so far that we've talked about has opened on Boxing Day. Oh, no, not almost everything. Just everything has opened on Boxing Day of their respective years. So
especially
2001,
this episode,
Boxing Day, two new attractions have opened. We get Batman Adventure, The Ride 2. So it's just the same ride, but it's the sequel ride, which
is slightly
different.
They updated the film, they updated the pre-show, those sort of things, but the ride system is still the same. It's still a kind of Star Tours motion simulator type ride.
Yeah. And then they add the Harry Potter Movie Magic Experience. Now, this is something that I know very little about. Do you know anything about
this? Now, this is something I remember quite well.
Ooh.
It was... So, you know, down the very back of the park where the Dodgem cars are?
Yes.
It was in that building, and it was kind of like this themed walkthrough experience, but it had the sets from the Harry Potter films.
Ah.
So, the first one, you would walk through and you get in there and you would walk through, you know, like Diagon Alley and places like that. They'd have the Hogwarts Express there, those sort of things. I think you kind of, and they'd have the, if I remember, it'd be the like tap the wand on the wall. Remember how J.K. Rowling wanted everyone to tap the wand on the wall as they went into Diagon Alley?
Oh, but yeah.
They were like, oh, capacity won't let it happen. If I remember, they did the tap on the wall and the wall magically opened as part of this experience.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so you went in, it was Ollivander's. It was built in, you know, kind of soundstage-like building, but I thought it was really cool. It was just a walkthrough of the sets, Harry Potter.
A lot. There was a traveling experience that went through the Powerhouse Museum that was very similar. Yeah. I think this could have possibly been the precursor to that. I'm not entirely sure.
This was more like, it kind of, this would almost be the precursor to Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Like, you were walking down Diagon Alley and it looked exactly like the Diagon Alley from the film.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, especially similar to like the studio tour that they do in London. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Which I've done.
Yeah, it's kind of the, so much smaller scale, but kind of the precursor to that in all honesty. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That's neat. And then.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
Now we've got a combo breaker. So on the 17th of June, 2002, longer Boxing Day.
That's 6 months too early.
Luke, I hope you're sitting down because we've got Scooby-Doo Spooky. Are you still sitting down?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to get scared because I said spooky. Oh. Can you make a sound and be like, ah?
Okay, hold on.
Okay, Scooby-Doo.
I just Men in Blacked myself with that flashing thing that makes me forget. Oh,
okay, so we haven't done this bit yet. Luke, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Scooby-Doo Spooky. Ah! Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm glad.
My poor microphone just peaked like crazy.
Rest in peace, our listeners who are just there driving, listening to a peaceful episode of the Review Time podcast, and then you just scream at them. Why would you do that, Luke? It's as if I false
spooked by the spooky coaster.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a spooky coaster. I think the first roller coaster ever themed around Scooby-Doo.
Which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably true. Wow. Whoop-de-doo. Hey, guys, watch out. I'm going to build my roller coaster in the backyard, and it's going to be the world's first roller coaster ever themed to Family Guy. So come on in. It's a world first.
But yeah, this was a $13 million wild mouse coaster. It was made out of steel, not wood, like another wild mouse roller coaster in Australia, which is still at Luna Park, Sydney. And it was themed to the 2002 film Scooby-Doo. So it wasn't like film, it wasn't the animated stuff.
Now, do you like this movie, the 2002 Scooby-Doo film?
I like it because it's dumb. It's just...
like this movie an embarrassing amount when I was younger. If I look back on it, you know, when I was like 10 years old when this movie came out, I really liked this movie. It had Rowan Atkinson in it. It had silly Scooby-Doo antics. Like, I quite liked this film.
It had parks and theme park backstage.
Exactly. And for me, I was a little bit scared of this ride. We did a little bit where I screamed, but the name Scooby-Doo Spooky Coaster and the atmosphere of the facade and the queue made me a little bit scared before I got on the ride. Like, it nicely, but apart from the fact that it like just played a 2 minute loop from behind the scenes of the film. But other than that, it made the atmosphere building was really good in this ride.
Well, a lot of people wonder why this queue isn't more. It's sort of like you just walk in and then you're in a big room. And something I found out recently is that Australian theme parks are massively limited by fire.
Yeah,
because restrictions. Because Australia is prone to spontaneously combusting, we sort of hold all of our attractions and everything to really high fire standards. Yeah. So to the point that now when you go to Movie World, if you go onto Scooby-Doo Spooky Coaster, they can only hold a certain amount of people in the indoor area because it doesn't have enough fire exits to facilitate and accommodate for the amount of people that are in there. So they count them, and then they let them through, and then they let more through. But that's why if you're ever in there and it's like there's a huge queue outside, likely it's just because the inside is full, but it's not like back-to-back, you know, chockers. Yeah.
It's not going to be as long as it might look.
But it's probably because still
only half of the indoor queue is filled. Yeah, this ride always gets some of the longest waits in the park, probably because it's one of the only real family rides.
Yeah.
There's some good, like, kids rides, but for family rides, it's really just this or Wild West Falls.
But this...
Oh, and Justice League.
It's also cool because this features both Ghost Train and coaster elements.
Yeah.
So it's got like the classic Wild Mouse section, but what they do is they cleverly use the Wild Mouse sort of ride system at the start because it's got its tight sort of corners and it can use tires to propel the vehicle along the track. It's got this really neat sort of Ghost Train element at the start, and then it goes up elevator, and then you go backwards for a bit. It's got
the elevator's cool.
Lots of really cool elements. My only problem is that they sort of changed it up a bit with Scooby-Doo Next Generation, which we'll talk about a bit later, but basically they just replaced a lot more things with screens and tried effects. I say tried effects because they look like they're being beta tested.
Not enough.
Within the attraction itself, which I think it's good to try new things. It's just you should probably... Yeah, flesh them out a bit more before you install them in the park. I do hear consistently a lot of people say that the new additions to Scooby-Doo Next Generation just don't work. Like, in the sense that
it'd
like,
be
they
better
break.
Just to have left the attraction as it was.
Yeah,
just in my opinion. But we'll get to that a little bit later in the episode. The next year, Harry Potter gets closed and replaced by a Matrix exhibition, which is very similar in the same style walkthrough. Some of the sets from the film, see some of the props, those sort of things. But in 2005, they announced big, massive plans for all of the Gold Coast theme parks that are owned by Village Roadshow. $65 million.
That's a lot of money.
And of that, Movie World is going to get two new attractions. And first is one of my most memorable attractions from the park.
Drum roll.
For some reason.
Drum roll.
A Shrek 4D adventure.
Hey, Shrek.
Now, this may sound silly. Do you remember Shrek?
Like the character?
No, the Shrek 4D Adventure.
I kind of remember it. I remember doing it at Universal Studios.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's the same as the ride that was at Universal Studios. Coolest part for me, had this kind of cool pre-show with some like animatronics of all of the Shrek characters that were trapped, you know, in the dungeon kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and they were, like, hanging on the walls and their boxes would, like, shake and their eyes would move and stuff.
Mm.
I also remember the pre-show not connecting to the film at all, pretty much. and doesn't really set it up. And the Shrek 4D film is some weird story that is non-canon and Lord Farquaad's ghost is now trying to kill Fiona or something weird like this. Like, it was very early, you know, Shrek had done so well, obviously, and they just seemed to be like, let's get a Shrek movie out, I guess.
Yeah,
like, let's get a Shrek attraction out.
We gotta get some Shrek in the theme parks.
They were like, I guess we don't need to worry about how this will affect the plot of any further Shrek sequels or anything. Oh, wait. Yes, we do. It doesn't count anymore.
I don't think they expected Shrek to be the hit that it was. Like, the fact that it's still a relevant sort of media empire to this day.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, six Shrek films. Mike Myers must just be, like, wondering where his life just became Shrek.
Shrek is any only thing that matters in life now.
I am also totally expecting, just this is a little bit of a tangent, but Mike Myers, we are overdue for a movie of his that is, oh my gosh, the name has completely escaped my brain. The guy who's
Austin
like
Austin Powers?
Yes, Austin Powers. We are overdue for an Austin Powers film.
Yeah.
Because I know they did that with Goldmember, but
yeah. Didn't there was one talk not long ago that they were gonna reboot Shrek.
What?
Yeah, apparently.
How do you reboot Shrek?
I don't know.
What's the point?
Like the same way they reboot everything recently. Poorly, I think, is the answer.
That's fair. I guess they want it to be like, oh, we could keep the franchise going and maybe it will make $1 billion over a decade. Or we could reboot it and we'll make $1 billion off one film.
And now Shrek is played by Zac Efron for some reason. And Fiona is played by Zendaya.
Yeah, I was about to say Zendaya. She's just everything nowadays. It's like, oh, yeah. We've got a female animated character. It's Zendaya. She's like,
ladies and gentlemen, Zendaya.
Is it Zendaya or Zendaya?
I don't know.
She's only got one name. We should probably figure that one out.
We can't remember it. But of course, Shrek, the biggest attraction in the park. But they announced two attractions. The second one was this little ride you may have heard of called Superman Escape, which is a accelerator roller coaster made by Intamin and a spectacular ride. Probably the second best roller coaster on the Gold Coast by a fair mile. But I would say the best roller coaster experience in Australia.
Yeah, I agree. I was about to say, I was like, ooh, contentious in saying that it's the second best roller coaster. I still think that the launch of this roller coaster is more exciting than any individual element on DC Rivals. But
yeah,
DC Rivals as a coaster is a better coaster.
It's a lot longer.
Because I feel like sometimes you hit that point on Superman Escape where it's not as comfortable because it's the over-the-shoulder restraints instead
of
the...
For no reason, because it doesn't go upside down.
No, I think just they don't want people to fly off the top hat because it does go over it fairly aggressively. Unlike usual traditional, you know, top hats where it goes real slowly. That's because it's quite short. It's a short boy.
Yeah, it's not very tall. It does 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 2 seconds. So same as, you know, your top thrill dragsters, accelerator at Knott's Berry Farm, that same ride system where air pressure essentially pulls the ride vehicle instantly at speed. So it's not like a magnetic launch where it's slowly going to build that speed. It snaps you to the speed. Still one of my favorite launches in the world because of that instant feeling of speed.
Yeah.
And it's not like any other accelerator out there. This actually has dark ride elements.
Yeah.
At the start.
It's similar Scooby-Doo, where it's like got a little sort of...
It tells an actual story. It's not just a roller coaster plonked down, which I like. I like this little bit extra. That's why I say it's the best roller coaster experience, because the whole idea is you're on the Metropolis Rapid Transit, the MRT, and you're going through and there's an earthquake underground. So you've got these pre-show kind of dark ride section at the start where you're on the train and, you know, things are falling apart. There's this gushing of water that comes down. There's crashed police cars, stuff like that. And then the most famous line in Australian theme park history, Superman, some very Aussie bloke who's apparently in Metropolis goes, look, it's Superman.
Superman
says, what does Superman say, Don? Give me your best Superman.
I'll get you out of here fast. Superman fast.
And then as he says Superman fast, it launches you out of the tunnel. And once you get over the top hat, the ride realistically is kind of over.
Yeah.
That's the only issue with it. It just goes around for a little bit before hitting the brake run with a lot of speed still.
Yeah, like, you're just like, ooh, there's like not enough ride. And I have heard weird rumors where it's like they're going to refurbish Superman, but it'd be that thing where it's like they'll refurbish it to be that thing where the top hat is maybe a little bit bigger and they'll just add more track. And I'm like, that sounds odd. I don't think I've ever heard of an attraction doing that before, but that was just like a rumor I heard off the cast.
I guess?
Yeah, true. The Dumper did that.
Like got rid of their top hat to add a loop and now it can launch faster and stuff like Son of Beast removed its loop, but it's a weird thing for a ride that isn't kind of problemsome.
But the most expensive part would be the accelerator element, surely. Mm. So I guess.
And ultimately, if they increase the height of it, they're going to have to. The launch is going to either have to be longer or they're going to have to be able to run it faster.
Yeah.
To get up the top.
I know. It was a weird rumor. I don't think it's true, but.
Shut down rumor tracker. You cut out whoever said that. Sorry.
Meanwhile, Village Roadshow Theme Park's board of executives are like, all right, boys, shut it down. Yeah, they disapproved. They said it was weird.
We're waiting for their approval.
That's what they slip it to us in like a very specifically targeted like YouTube ad disguised to look like some sort of theme park rumors video.
We'll quickly race through what happens for the rest of the decade here in the 2000s. We've got Batwing Space Shot, a space shot. Hey,
yeah, it's
great name.
It's a space shot.
SNS. SNS shock tower type ride opens up. Fun ride. Gives you good views of the park.
Yeah, it gives you good views of the valley as well that this is all in. That's neat.
And then, sadly, in 2008, after 16 years, one of the world's longest running stunt shows, Police Academy Stunt Show, closes. Oh. Which is a huge shame. This is still probably the biggest loss this park has ever felt, in my opinion.
Yeah, they have never been able to really recoup the magic that this show had. And it did 18,000 performances.
Yeah.
So a lot of people saw this, but it was still massively popular.
And this is still the thing that, like, my parents talk about. This is one of the things they remember from Movie World.
They'll do that classic thing where they're like, oh, is that, that police stunt show, is that
remember
still there?
Remember that funny show where the guys are falling over? Is that still there? And you have to go, no, sorry, that closed 13 years ago at this stage.
Wow. Did you read that thing the other day? And it's like people talking about the 90s nowadays is like people in the 90s talking about the 60s.
Oh, no. Don't like that.
It makes me very upset.
Yeah.
Look, aging is a part of life.
Because Police Academy Stunt Show may have closed, but don't worry. Its replacement, a $10 million show, Hollywood Stunt Driver, opens up on Boxing Day. So this closes on the end of April. A new show opens up, surprise, surprise, on Boxing Day. Have you seen the original Hollywood Stunt Driver?
I have not, but I believe they anticipated that it was going to be the next bloody Batman film because they increased the capacity from 1,400 to 2,000.
Which, I'm going to say it, original Hollywood Stunt Driver, and now this might just be the opposite, what nostalgia talking, isn't terrible. Nowhere near as good as Police Academy Stunt Show. The original show, though, isn't terrible because
what
some
a rating, boys and girls.
It.
It's like underneath the poster, Hollywood Stunt Driver 2, quote from Luke Carroll, isn't terrible.
Which I can't say. That's about
it's
Hollywood Stunt Driver
bearable.
1. I can't say that about Hollywood Stunt Driver 2, which we'll get to. But Hollywood Stunt Driver 1 had some cool effects. Let's be honest, it was just a light version of Lights, Motors, Action at the Disney parks, which is fine, but it had two really memorable effects in my mind. It followed the same plot. There's a red hero car, which is being tracked down by black police cars sort of thing. There's, of course, the Hollywood director. Hey, guys, it's me, Morgan Ross, and we're shooting out here today in Italy. And, you know, so they're shooting out in Italy. They show you the stunts. They show you how it's done. Two really cool stunts that did happen, though. There's a part where a car gets, like, a rocket launcher or something fired at it and it splits in half and drives off. Just the front half of the car drives off. And then there's a second part where the red hero cars being chased and they zip up and around. They zip up on top of a parking garage and they hit a ramp. And it's like a fake car on essentially a piece of roller coaster track. But you can't see that. And the way it was staged made it look like the actual car jumps, bursts out of a building, lands in another building, and then comes out the bottom. But it was done really well. And then there's a big fiery explosion and stuff like that. This one isn't terrible.
Yeah, I prefer you haven't seen the Risk.
Yeah. Which it's not as good, obviously, as what it replaced, which is always a big crime, but it's not as bad as it could be, and it's not as bad as it would be.
I feel like it was definitely one of those things where, you know, I have seen a video of the original Hollywood stunt driver, and I feel like one of their concerns probably would have been they have to reset it. And it would be really hard to reset what you were just saying. So that maybe limits them to about 2 shows a day. And then you've got the other problem of Risk. And with Risk comes insurance. And Australians are not okay with Risk. This is something that I find is really big just in Australia, is that we do not like accidents. And if an accident does happen, it is... Yeah, it will stop industries for a long amount of time.
And I think that did happen at one point. There was like a crash during the show, during the second Hollywood Stunt Driver 2, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And it like made it so that they couldn't do half the stunts they used to, or something weird like that happened. I don't want to say too much because I might not be exactly correct, but I have a memory of something like that happening.
Well, that's, yeah, I feel like... In the US, if there was a crash in Lights, Motors, Action, Disney would just pay out whoever it was and then just send them on their merry way. Whereas
Here's
in
50 grand, keep your mouth shut.
Maybe it's got to do with the whole fact that it's like, well, the public has to pay for their healthcare. So we, as you know, the law, have to ensure that
the
public
is insurance.
Protected. Yeah.
Like, they'd still have workplace insurance, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just...
Who cares about Hollywood Stunt Driver? Who cares? Because the most important thing happens this year.
Ooh.
A giant, ugly roof over Main Street is constructed.
So, should we say that 2008 is the end of the golden,
the good,
like, times of movie
that.
World? There's
we've still got, you know, Looney Tunes. You've still got... Superman Escapes there now. You've got Police Academy still. This, in my mind, is still what I would say the golden era of movie world, in that it still kind of has that... It's not just chuck thrill rides in at this stage, which it becomes later on.
Yeah, it's... So, I've... this... I do not like the cover over... Movie world.
We have arguments with friends. We have arguments with other people in the Australian theme park industry about this. The parks that have covers that work are because it snows or rains a lot in those parks.
Mm.
This park put a cover on it so they could rent out the event space.
100%.
And they leave the Christmas lights hanging from the roof all year.
So... That's one of the things where everyone's like, oh, but it's, you know, it's because of weather. It's like no other theme park on the Gold Coast has this. But then when you look into it, it's like construction of a roof over Main Street was completed. The 4,000 square meter roof was supplied by Max Australia and was designed to improve guest protection from the elements and provide a 2,000 person capacity venue for functions and events. It would have been that thing.
The first part, is the spinning of, oh, it's for the guests. It's for the guests.
If you ever want to know what, like, the actual intentions behind a company, look at what they say benefits the consumer, and
the
then
consumer,
look at what they say benefits them. And 90% of the time, they only cared about what benefits them.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would not have been upset if someone got a little bit wet on Main Street.
Yeah. And the biggest thing about this is as well, I'm not against a nicely designed roof. Like Universal Studios Japan roof is quite nice. It doesn't have any visible like frames or poles that go into the actual ground of Main Street. Tokyo Disneyland's roof over World Bazaar, you can see the poles that are holding it up, but they're these really nice, ornate, Victorian wrought iron look to them. These just look like a pool shade cloth, like pole has been stuck up and then strung between it is, you know, the roof.
The best way I can describe it, like if you look at pictures, It is probably even worse in pictures. It's not quite as bad as this in person, but it still definitely does take away from the entire sort of setting of Main Street. But it just looks like something you'd expect in a school, a school quadrangle.
Yeah, it looks like what they'd put over the COLA, we used to call it, the covered outdoor learning area. That's what it was called at our school.
The COLA. All right. We called it the quadrangle, but that's because
we had a quad as well, but the COLA was where the cover was, the covered the outdoor learning area.
And I don't really like the cover. I think a lot of people don't as well. And if you look at Movie Park Germany, I believe it is, there's the exact same Main Street, like literally identical. They took the blueprints, blueprints, and they made the exact same thing, and it doesn't have the cover, and it looks really good.
Yeah, so it shows that they don't need it.
Yeah.
But let's jump in to the next decade. We're in the 2010s now, and we start them out by closing two favorite attractions.
Oh, no.
Looney Tunes River Ride and Batman Adventure the Ride close in 2011. And one of them doesn't get replaced for a very long time and probably not worth it in the end.
Yeah, well, both of them I don't feel got replaced for a while. There was definitely a gap between the two.
Batman is the next year, which isn't terrible in theme parks.
True. So I thought there was a longer break.
Yeah, I remember that too, but...
So, the crazy thing for me is because Movie World isn't that old, all of this history just seems like it happened over a much longer period of time because a lot of theme parks will do that thing where they open an attraction and the attraction will be there for 30, 40 years. They'll run it into the ground. Yeah. Movie World seems to just hit a point.
People are like, you idiot, how dare you? Where here, it's like a good ride, 8 years, that's good enough, close it down.
Well, it just seems like, it's that movie where everyone's got, like, time on their wrists. It's like the currency is time.
Once
your time runs out, you just die. That's what this seems to be. It's like there's no rhyme or reason.
Rides out. Go.
It's just like, all right, shut this down.
They do open one attraction in this period in the same year, but this one... Shock Horror opens up on the 23rd of December instead of the 26th. This is Green Lantern Coaster. It's an El Loco. This steepest drop in the southern hemisphere at 120 degrees. It's just an SNS El Loco coaster. They're very slow, kind of hang you around. They're fine.
You were petrified of this when we first did it. I remember you just being like, no, not Green Lantern, please. Like, you were closing your eyes on the lift hill, which you maybe still do. I don't pay that much attention anymore.
I don't anymore. This was kind of this opened in 2011. It's been really only the last, 5 or 6 years that I've been, bigger, faster, taller for coasters.
Mm.
Because at this point, so 2011, the only theme parks I've been to in the world are... Australian theme parks or Disney theme parks. And the only Disney parks I've been to are Disneyland and Disney California Adventure.
True. It was sort of there once you went.
Isn't much to compare it to at this point.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. Which now, I didn't like it because it had a big drop that kind of goes beyond vertical. And then when you ride it, you're like, oh, that's nothing.
It does. I agree that this is a slow attraction. I think it it's more... I always consider this more of a flat ride than a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's kind of like the coaster version of a flat ride.
Yeah, because it... Yeah. Yeah, a roller coaster to me is that thing where it's, you know, it's all about speed and corners and turns and all of that. It's like getting a big snake and going through the air. This is like not that.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
That's it.
A lot of parks have El Loco coasters, I think, because they're cheap and compact.
Well, they're made by SNS, and SNS.
Yeah.
They sort of mostly specialize in flat rides.
And I think like two of them might just be called El Loco or something like that. But yeah, this ride is fine. I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's arguably, apart from the kids' ride, the weakest coaster in the park, in my opinion. But it's fine. Moving on, next year, 2012, they close Lethal Weapon the ride, but not to replace it fully. They just replace the trains with new comeback trains that have lap bar restraints instead of over the shoulder, as well as onboard audio. And it gets rethemed to be called Arkham Asylum Shock Therapy, which is themed to the Arkham video games, which were huge at the time. This kind of gritty open world Batman game where, you know, you've got this, that, and the other. But this is themed pretty much to the Joker. And he's, like, injecting you, or there's some story where, like, this is... You're in Arkham Asylum, and he's created this ride to be this, like, you know, a test of people, essentially, or something
well,
like
the
that.
The official title is...
Shock therapy?
Yeah, shock therapy, where I think it's designed to be that thing where, you know, he's making this laughing gas. It's in the games, like he's making this sort of gas that turns people crazy, and this is then the attraction where he does that.
Yeah.
So it's very cool loosely tied together.
Yeah. The voice for the Joker is Mark Hamill, which is cool. It's like a Mark Hamill in Australian theme parks. I don't mind this version. I think I rode Lethal Weapon once. I've ridden this one more times. It did get rough towards the end of its life. Comeback trains didn't really save it as much as I think they were expecting it to. And this ride has been closed, but not officially closed since December of 2019.
Yeah, it's a bit of a doozy, in which we all know the reason why they aren't announcing the closure is because they don't want a dump to their...
It looks bad.
Yeah, their publicity. Which in the past they said that the reason why they weren't announcing it was because they didn't want their stock price to fall, but now they're privately owned, like owned by an investment company. So... yeah, it's just kind of strange that they still haven't announced that this ride is closed. It's definitely gone. People have mentioned that it's being disassembled, like very slowly, but it is like the capital has been raised to get rid of this, which is pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is weird to me, but hey, you do you.
Yeah.
Movie world, and we'll just sit here and rip on you for it.
I'm sorry. It will probably sound like we hate this park, and I do want to point out, I love Movie World. I still believe that this is Australia's premier theme park.
Yeah, for sure.
I just also feel it's that thing where it's not held to the same standard that they used to. Maybe the international standard has changed and this park has sort of just kept on doing its thing. But I don't know. It's
which
just...
I shouldn't... It's a shame that I can say the best era for Movie World was 13 years ago. Like, that's a shame, like, because it's such a great park.
Though a lot of people will argue with that in the sense that, just mainly because of one ride. Yeah, DC Rivals.
Yeah, which they essentially say, oh, well, the whole park is the world's greatest theme park because it has one good ride, and I can forgive it for its shortcomings because of that. Yeah, it's a good ride, and we'll talk about it in a sec, but it's... I would... Here we go. Here comes Loose Luke's wild statement of the episode. bring back Police Academy Stunt Show. Bye-bye, DC Rivals. I'll be a happy boy.
Yeah. It's the thing where, you know, we got asked once. People said that our review, like our review style on Review Time, was flawed because it doesn't accommodate for standout attractions. So what they were saying is that if you have 10 out of 10 for thrill rides, but you know, you've got something like DC Rivals, which is a spectacular thrill ride, where do you then add those bonus points into the review?
Mm.
In which we just said we don't.
And they talk about it in thrill rides.
And that's, they were like, wait.
12 out of 10. That's not how it works.
And that's the thing, is that DC Rivals doesn't help families. It doesn't help entertainment. It doesn't help theming, atmosphere. It doesn't affect any of that. It's a good thrill ride.
Your theme park is purely the world's greatest thrill ride. You're not going to get an 80 out of 100. You're going to get about a 14 probably out of 100 because that's not the review system isn't designed like that. And I'm sure we'll get into it one day when we can review things again of how the whole system works, but it's designed around the idea that what you look for in a theme park will be represented somewhere in that video review, whether you go to parks for entertainment, thrill rides, family rides, whatever it is, that's how it's split up. And to do well, really well in a Review Time review of a park means you have to do really well in everything.
Yeah.
Meaning that chances are most people are going to have a great day.
Yeah.
Cedar Point and parks like that are spectacular for thrill seekers. But if the only thing you like to do in a theme park is see some entertainment, you're not going to have an amazing, you know, as amazing of a day as if you go to, say, Tokyo Disney Sea.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, I feel like there's a big emphasis on the enthusiast community when it comes to a lot of this, where it's like, oh, well, you know, having a really big coaster, then that's huge for this park because it's something that the enthusiast community wants to see. Unfortunately, enthusiasts usually only come as singles, very rarely groups or couples.
Yeah.
The thing
they
that,
don't pay the bills at the end of the day.
Exactly. The thing that theme parks care about are families. They're the ones who have
groups,
the big
families,
bucks. Because it's, you know, you bring the kids and then you bring grandma to watch the kids when you do things. And then maybe you bring other families with you. And that in itself, like if we brought a couple of other enthusiasts, it's maybe be like two people. If a family brought another family, that's automatically like a minimum of three. Upwards to maybe like five or six people just from inviting another group. So that's why I saw a thing on Twitter today and it was like, everyone needs to remember that the primary goal at the end of the day of a theme park is to make money, which sort of makes me sit down and go, well, why are we even trying? But that's reviews. Our reviews aren't to benefit the, the theme park. To benefit the consumer.
Like, yeah. At the end of the day, that's the point of every business. Doesn't mean you can't have some fun along the way whilst letting them achieve their end goal. So Lethal Weapon's closed at this point. We see the 2012 Justice League Alien Invasion 3D opens. A $9 million interactive dark ride manufactured and built by Sally Corporation. Big famous thrill ride. Big famous company in designing themed entertainment. They do stuff like animatronics for Disney, that sort of thing. So this, though, if you've been to a Six Flags park recently and you've ridden the Justice League ride, it seems to me that Sally sold Movie World a $9 million advertising campaign that they could then use to show to Six Flags that this idea works well.
It was a $9 million proof of concept. I feel like when you look at the, like, I don't mind this attraction. It's not spectacular, but
cool
it doesn't
effects.
Have to be. It's what I'd say is around a D ticket.
To shoot a family duck ride.
But it was $9 million. And I'm just thinking, like, with that technology and all of that, surely Sally Corp must have been like, look, we'll do you a deal, but we're going to sell this to everyone.
Like, yeah, you have to be used. Like, there's obviously no exclusivity on it, which if you want exclusivity on a theme park ride, you pay a lot more. It's as simple as that. They obviously don't have that because it's very similar. And I used to like this ride more than I do now. And this is just because I've been lucky enough to ride the Six Flags version. So I've ridden the one at Six Flags Magic Mountain, which just seems to be the sequel to this ride, but the sequel that's better in every way.
Yeah. I still like it, but
I like it.
I can understand why you
would. It's fine. It's good for kids. I'm sure families enjoy it. It's got that game aspect where it's rewritable because of, you know, trying to get a high score, trying to get that sort of thing. Not quite in the same way that, you know, a Midway Mania or something like that, I would say, is rewritable. There's not really clear, you know, this is what is going to give you big points or this is what's going to, you know, be worth the most or anything like that. It just kind of shoot at stars.
Shoot here and get a score.
Yeah. So that's 2012. We're getting to the modern present day, but there's a roadblock in the way we got to talk about. Wait. Hollywood Stunt Driver closes, and in its place, a Frankenstein show of hodgepodge, whatever they could find from the set. Hollywood Stunt Driver 2. They've outsourced the show to Showtime FMX.
So
and they just do figure eights for 30 minutes.
So that's one of the big sort of changes, is that Hollywood Stunt Driver, the original one, was all that was like in-house. Whereas then they gave it to Showtime FMX. And for those that don't know, Showtime FMX is sort of the people who, if you go into the Easter show, or anything like that, they're basically what you imagine as like arena style sort of, oh, we've got guys on motorbikes and they're doing...
Who wants to see some freestyle motocross?
Yeah, they're doing like backflips and they're doing all of this. And then maybe they have like the Utes come out and they're sort of like tailing each other and they're going fast and they make loud noises. That's Showtime FMX. And that's basically what the replacement show is when they bring in Hollywood Stunt Driver 2. I don't want to sound too negative on this, because there is definitely a demographic out there that massively enjoy this show.
The show's always full. And it's always full. They're always hollering and cheering for it, too.
And I hear lots of people who come out and like, that's amazing. But yeah. I feel like, and I just want to touch on this quickly, is that we are spoilt. And we need to acknowledge that we are spoilt in the sense
that... But I feel, are we spoilt in that the two previous shows are better? Are we spoiled that this show has gotten worse every time it's been re-envisioned?
I feel like the problem comes from executives going, all right, we're going to close down the show and make a new one. The last one cost us X amount every day. Let's see where we can go from here. And then someone puts up their hand and they're like, oh, let's make it cheaper. And then they just keep on doing that. So, you know, whereas... Yeah.
Which there's less drivers in this version. There's, the jumping car effect isn't in it anymore.
There's
the
way less actors.
Isn't in it. There's less actors. Everywhere they could, they've cut costs, which, fair enough, I see why you wanted to do it, but it shouldn't feel that much less of a show. Mm. And as you said, people enjoy this show, so good on them. But I do wonder what those people would think if they had have seen the previous shows as well.
Yeah.
Sure. And the thing is, this is the show of the park. Mm. It's right at the end of Main Street. It's pretty much dead center in the park. It's the only real show that's on multiple times a day. This is the show the park wants you to be like, this is it. This is our Fantasmic.
Yeah.
This is our Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular. This is the show of the park. And it's bad.
Yeah, it's just a bit eh. That's and
somebody join us. Someone who's passionate about this show, join us for the great Hollywood Stunt Driver debate, and we will have a whole episode on this. And if it might be pretty obvious who's going to be the neutral in the middle, and who's going to be the Grumpel Grumperson on the anti side.
Look, I'm just going to, we've gotten a little bit negative. So let's just talk about some good things. An okay thing, which was the $4 million junior drive-in school, which opened up. Now, this is cool. This is neat. It's a little...
I'll wrap it up in one statement.
Oh, no.
This ride's good. Not as good as what it replaced.
Yeah, I agree. It's neat in that you drive around in these sort of little electric cars through a miniature movie world.
It'd be like Autopia if you drove through a tiny version of Disneyland.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's a cool idea. And it's untracked.
Mm.
So there's no track down the middle of your car. You can kind of drive wherever you want within the roads that are in the attraction and stuff like that. They've got replicas of, Scooby-Doo's castle. Some of the roller coasters are represented and stuff like that. It's cool.
But it's 100% for kids.
Yeah. It's not like... So it replaced the Looney Tunes River Ride, which was for the whole family. This is purely for kids.
Mm.
If you go on it... I've been on it once. Have you been on it or have you just looked at it?
I've just looked at it.
Yeah. You feel a bit weird as an adult wanting to go on it.
Yeah. It's not like Disney where you can go on some of the attractions that are,
anything.
For more of a younger audience. This is definitely like it's straight front and center. This is for kids. And you're like, Can I just also point out something as well when you look at the list? Everyone's sort of, like, I can imagine there's this general vibe at the moment that we're like, ooh, these new attractions, we're not big fans. Can I just point out, if you look at the year 2000 to the year 2008, you get Scooby-Doo Spooky Coaster, which is $13 million.
Good.
You get Roadrunner Roller Coaster, which is fairly decent. It's specifically designed for children, but that's a couple million dollars as well. You get Superman Escape, $16 million. You get Batwing Space Shot, just a flat ride that's $5 million. And then you get Hollywood Stunt Driver, which is $10 million. Now compare that to the additions that come post-2008, which they close Looney Tunes Ride and Batman Adventure, but then you get the Green Lantern, which it doesn't have a cost, but I believe it was around $6 million, if you can just confirm that.
Yeah, I'll have a look.
Then the Lethal Weapon refurbishment was $2 million, and that changed it to Arkham Asylum. Then you got the Justice League attraction, which is $9 million. Then you've got $4 million for junior driving school. Like, there's a vast difference between the costs of these attractions.
I can't find the price. But I can't imagine it would have run, something like a Superman or anything like that.
Yeah.
Price-wise.
So you've got them spending $10 million to make Hollywood Stunt Driver. $5 million for just a space shot. And then you've got...
Where Hollywood Stunt Driver 2 probably would have cost like $2
million. Mm. And then you've got an entire dark ride for... almost less than double a space shot. So it's, I don't know, it just seems like they've started to sort of cut their costs. And it makes sense. It's after the GFC. So we've got to give them time to catch up.
Yeah. The next thing they do include is a weird one. So there used to be this like graveyard kind of themed area that kind of started the Wild West section. They've gotten rid of that and have put in a DC Comics villains themed area. And in the middle of that area is Doomsday Destroyer, an Intamin suspended twin hammer thrill ride. This is one of the few times the theming is better than the ride by a lot.
Yeah, it's... I don't really like the ride. It's just
like
a bit.
Doomsday Destroyer.
I know some people who do, but it's twin hammers are just way too controlled for me.
It's too controlled, in my opinion.
Which it sort of just feels like a motor's going weep weep, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Whereas I really like this land. I think it's a cool addition, And yeah. It definitely does start to set the standard for it's like, okay, we're going to add a flat ride, but we're going to make it a full themed experience. Like around it, you've got all of these theming elements. And I can tell what they've done to get it over the line with the executives. Whoever was in charge of this, the creative team, they're like, okay, we'll add this full interactive themed precinct. But what they've done is they've also included these, what used to be wristbands that you would scan onto certain elements. And that would...
You had to pay for them.
Yeah, you had to pay like $15 for these. And I can imagine that like, please, let us add these elements. And they're like, I don't know. And it's like, you can make people pay for them. You don't have to pay for them anymore. They just like keep the wristbands there on like a metal wire. So
now, which makes sense. I'm guessing that meant because nobody bought them, which why would you?
Yeah,
like they were expensive and it kind of let you do a few little interactive activities and that was it. But yeah, the area is a lot better themed than it needs to be for such a lackluster flat ride.
Yeah,
in my opinion, it's just not that exciting, I guess, is that I didn't really know how to explain it. If you haven't been on one, they're just a bit nothing
so,
in the grand scheme of things.
A part of it's got to do with cognitive dissonance. You want to feel like there's not much control when you get on on an attraction because that makes you feel less safe, which then gives you more thrills. Yeah. This feels really tame and really safe. Even though it goes upside down and hangs you upside down, it's like the way it gets to it is if you're like swinging your arm, it's like there's a big curve in that like it's slowing down and it's just like, oh, you hang there for a little bit. And then it just keeps going. It's not like, woo, sort of. It's just like,
Yeah, it's a shame. Because, the area deserves a better ride, shall we say. But we are up to 2017. This is it, the end of what we have to talk about, because nothing major has been added since 2017. But in 2017, something relatively big, I guess, opened with a $30 million Mack Rides hypercoaster.
This is it,
ingeniously
baby.
Named the DC Rivals Hypercoaster. The world's longest, fastest, biggest, strongest, best ride ever.
Harder, better, faster, stronger. Sponsored by Daft Punk. No, this is when they finally added their Mack Ride hypercoaster. It was the single largest ride investment in Village history, and I feel like they were saving up over the last decade to afford this thing. But this is one of the most...
skimming, it felt like. It's like, instead of spending, you know, $6 million to build a bigger driving school, spend $4 to just take up half the space. You know, instead of a $12 million Sally Core dark ride, what can you do with $9 and we don't need that exclusivity anymore? And then they're like, here it is. Here's the 30 mil we've saved over the last 7 years.
They just all pulled it together. But I believe to get this over the line, they had to like sell the land beneath their feet. So it was they sold
it. Something we haven't talked about.
It's a bit odd. So what they did is they sold the land that Movie World and the studios and all of that's on under a 99-year exclusivity contract. So it's almost that thing where it's
just,
like,
yeah, buy it. Back?
This is someone else's problem.
Yeah, for 99. So yeah, they no longer own the land, but they contractually are able to use it for the next 99 years or something weird.
Yeah, so
don't know what's going to happen after that. Don't think it really bothers us.
Won't affect
probably
us.
Won't be here to see it. But it is weird to think that, yeah, you know, in however many 90 years left until it finishes, if the park's still around, the owner could just go, okay, you're done.
It's ours now. But I think they're just hoping that it's like they can just get it back. I guess it would legitimately be that thing where it's like not our problem. The executives who would have made that decision would have been over 50. They're like, this is the next generation problem.
Bye-bye.
I'll create it. I'll get the money, and then you solve it later. It's basically global warming. Anyway, on that note...
We didn't talk... DC Rivals, we talked about a fair bit over the rest of the show. Great ride. I love it. just a good hyper coaster. It's got a cool non-inverting loop that tries to yeet you into the car park. It's got some fun bunny hops, you know, some good airtime moments. It's just a good ride in general. As we were saying before, this is probably Australia's best coaster, even though Superman is Australia's best coaster experience.
There's no surprises with this. That's the thing for me about DC Rivals, is that it's just you are getting a really good coaster experience. It's also on display as you drive in. Like, there's no hidden elements or anything like that.
It's got this bright pink track.
Fuchsia.
It stands
out.
It's
fuchsia.
Fuchsia. Luke. Sorry.
but it's... That's the thing when talking about it. The best thing I can say is that it's just an incredible roller coaster because there's nothing else beyond that. There's no theming. There's nothing. Oh, there's the backwards. Yeah. Backwards is horrifying.
You want to pay $15 to brown your pants? Ride it backwards.
Code brown.
Yeah, it is intense.
Oh, yeah.
But that... We haven't seen anything since. We're 4 years past this stage. There's no inklings of anything coming down the pipeline. Obviously, Arkham Asylum is closed. Something may be replacing that, hopefully, in the years to come.
Well, Movie World,
VRTP,
now
they kind of focus on one park at a time.
Mm.
So, like, they're currently doing some big expansions to SeaWorld. So, Movie World's taken the back foot for a while. What would you like to see in the future for Movie World?
Well, currently, Village Roadshow used to be on the ASX public market. They've recently sold their investments to a private company. Oh, well, they were bought out, essentially. So what happened is a private company came in and they were like, hey, we're going to buy all of the shares and it's now ours. And this is an equity business. So they basically come in and they pump lots of money into a business and then sell it on. So the general gist of what's going to happen over the next couple of years is that this company is apparently just going to funnel money into these parks.
We can hope.
And try and make them as amazing as possible. But the big problem, as you were saying, is because after DC Rivals, they went, all right, SeaWorld needs help. So they then just focused on SeaWorld and we haven't seen anything since. Like literally, we saw Scooby-Doo Next Generation. But that's it. It wasn't a huge refurbishment. It was just some replacements of effects. And that came around 2019. Yeah. It didn't
2018, I think.
It didn't replace tracks or anything like that. It was just very, all right. That's
but arguably it's worse than it was previously, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. But in that, I'd just like to see some more family attractions, really. Some more dark rides and...
Yeah, a dark ride would be amazing, in my opinion, here. And just, can we get a little less DC? Just a little less?
Yeah.
Why does every major attraction seem to be DC? If we look, DC Rivals Hypercoaster, Doomsday Destroyer, Justice League Alien Invasion 3D, Arkham Asylum Shock Therapy, Green Lantern Coaster... The only thing they've added in the last 10 years that wasn't themed to DC is Junior Driving School, which, because it's based on the park Movie World, is half themed to DC anyway.
I reckon they're probably paying really good money for that license and they're just getting their use.
Yeah. But if they want to use it, it must do well because they keep utilizing it over and over and over. But hopefully the future is looking bright for this park. As we said, it's probably Australia's premier theme park. Fingers crossed it does well, it comes out of the pandemic well, and once SeaWorld finishes up with its big expansions, we get something exciting for Movie World. But that will do it for this week's episode of the show. Have you been to Movie World? Do you want to go to Movie World? Let us know. You can get in touch with us on Twitter. I'm at ReviewTime Luke.
I'm at ReviewTime Tom.
You can get in touch with both of us at ReviewTime on Twitter and pretty much everywhere else. That's going to do it for this week. Hope you enjoyed. We'll see you next week for a brand new show that even we don't know what it is yet. Let's find out together, the same place, same time, next week. See ya.
Bye.
Review Time's theme podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dominic Lacey. A big shout out goes to our newest Patreon, Kelsey Cannon, long-term Patreon, Peter Matthews, and to you, the listener. Review Time's theme podcast will be back next week.